It's Friday, May 1st, 2009, and you're listening to episode 145 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 59 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
And my name is Chris.
Take two. Man, we have been doing this show for, what, 3 years now?
Yeah, we're almost to our three-year anniversary. Not quite, almost.
Almost, and this is the first time in 100,000 episodes, however many we've done, and we actually had a blue screen. First time it's ever happened.
All right, real quick, I want to let you guys know that the episode next week, like this week, is going to be late. It's just because we're having some scheduling problems getting our adult life schedules lined up so we can all meet to record. So fair warning, just like this week's episode's a little bit late, next week's is going to be a little bit late as well. Thereafter, we should be back on Wednesdays. But there is an episode coming, so don't be disturbed when you don't see it on Wednesday. We are still doing the charity Reina's Wings through the March of Dimes. We are supporting a great cause that's helping to cure prenatal and neonatal conditions. And on top of that, we are also supporting with hair.
That's right.
Children that are suffering from cancer and other diseases that cause them to lose their own hair. So please check the show notes for the link and get your donation in.
I'm sorry, Dan, you're still not quite long enough.
But no, my hair does grow fast.
Oh, your hair. Yes. And your hair is too short.
Oh, yeah.
My
hair is too short as well. Right.
But
do check the show notes. Be sure to get your donations in. We're doing really well. We're actually already fairly close to the goal. But you know what? That really doesn't matter, because whether you're on the first part of the $1,000 or your excess, there is no excess here.
Yes.
We are saving lives. We're helping to cure conditions. This is a great cause. Get involved.
If you donate money, you could be saving the life of a future gamer.
Right.
This could be the person who writes the next big, great game. This could be somebody who really adds to a hobby. But, you know, no matter who it is, it's somebody who's loved and who wants to be loved. It's kids, and you're helping kids.
They did want to have me, and they being those that are sponsoring Reina's Wings, did want to have me mention that the walk that they are sponsoring is going to be, it's either May 1st or May 2nd, I can't remember which. So if you want to get your money in to be part of the sponsorship for that walk, you'll need to do it before then, but donations will still be accepted after then. It's not like once this walk occurs, the March of Dimes shuts down and every condition's cured. So once again,
we can only hope, but I don't see that.
Yeah, we can only hope, but anyway. All right. So Chris, just like you like, I'm going to pitch so you can hit.
All right. You pitch and I'll whack it hard and go forward in life.
All right. So you had something you wanted to announce. Go for it.
I did. Actually, I have two things I wanted to announce. The first one, which is much shorter, is my daughter just brought me a beer. So this is
Oh, my God.
That might be illegal.
I'm pretty sure it's child labor, Chris.
It's the best kind of child labor.
There's plenty of child labor violations going on at the house.
Well, there's a minor serving alcohol in his house.
That's true. Yeah. So all kinds of laws.
I know. I'm pissed. I'm pissed that Sky is not old enough to do this for me yet.
Well, in Missouri, that's a felony.
It's a good thing it's in Iowa.
It's the best kind of felony.
That's right. Because it sure was a refreshing felony.
It's a wonder felony. I mean,
So, Chris, what kind of beer is it?
Actually, it's like a hand-me-down beer. It is a Leinenkugel's Honey Weiss. That my wife said she could not drink, so she just gave it to me.
Too sweet.
So it's got her backwash in it and everything?
Yes.
That's all right, hot. Chris, what's your real announcement?
Wouldn't be the first time. Anyway, the real announcement is, for those of you who don't know, I'll give you a little history lesson. About a year ago, I came to Dan and I said, I want to do a Skies of Glass comic. Dan said, hey, that sounds like a great idea. But although he said it in much more flowery prose, it went on for a good 10 minutes. Anyway.
He called you gay, didn't he?
In so many words. Sorry, Hansel. Anyway, after Gen Con, we got in contact with an artist, and that didn't quite work out. Got in contact with a second artist. That definitely did not work out. Both terribly nice gentlemen. Just didn't quite work out for various reasons, and that's fine.
Great guys, great artists.
Yes. I like their stuff. It wasn't a personnel thing. It was just more of a scheduling, couldn't do it, couldn't meet the requirements, so on and so forth. So I'm bound and determined to see this webcomic through. We are putting the call out for an artist for our Skies of Glass webcomic. I'm going to give Dan a resource document that's going to have character descriptions, and we'll make that available
Right. I'll link it directly off the show notes.
In there, you'll have character descriptions, and then basically draw up what you feel represents those, and then you can email them to skiesofglass@gmail.com. You don't need to post them on the forums, nothing like that. Just go to skiesofglass@gmail.com.
All one word, no spaces or anything like that.
We're going to let this run here for a few weeks, and then once we've got everything in, we'll take a look, we'll make a determination, and then we'll go forward from there and talk scheduling and talk ownerships and all those other things. As far as your submissions go, what you submit is still yours and yours to keep and yours to use, but once we've made the decision as to who we'd like to go with from that point forward, then we'll discuss ownership rights and all the other wonderful things that go along with this little venture that we're trying to accomplish.
So once again, check the show notes for the requirements, skiesofglass@gmail.com. And as we get closer to picking a person, at that point, we'll discuss all the business, financial, legal stuff that figures into this. Mm-hmm. For now, we're just looking for someone who's basically committed, a good artist, and has the free time to do it. So if you meet those three things, it's going to be a dramatic.
This is a dramatic webcomic. This is not a joking, comical webcomic.
All right. I said last episode that I thought we were doing something that was a first in the history of Fear the Boot, and it is kind of a first. This episode is part two of the prior episode. In the prior episode, we talked a little bit about defining genres, mm-hmm. which kicked off some really interesting discussions on the forums, yeah. on the blog that are still raging.
Actually, yeah, the genre discussion, I mean, that really got people excited. In fact, I almost wonder, did anybody listen to the rest of the show? Because that's all everyone's talking about. You know, they really got into the genre discussion.
One of the neat things that came out of it, mm-hmm. and this is kind of the note that I'm going to close that out on before we move on to part two, because part two is not about discussing genre.
We're done with genre for now.
Is I made the observation that there are words and phrases that we use every day where we know what they mean, but we can't really define them. Mm-hmm. A great example, and heavens, please don't pick this one up on the forums.
No, go ahead.
Well, I mentioned it on the forums and nobody chased it, which was fortunate, is I was in a world religions class where the teacher on the first day asked us to define religion. Mm-hmm. We couldn't do it. All of us knew if something was brought up, okay, if I said, I have a religion, everyone knows what I mean.
Everybody knows the textbook dictionary definition.
But we could not come up with a common definition.
Yeah.
And it was interesting watching how people could not, in the same way, quite define science fiction, even though we all know what it means.
So people couldn't just open up a dictionary and look up religion and say, okay, this is our common definition? Or would people say, well, that doesn't fit what my view is?
I think it's more the latter, that doesn't always fit the common usage. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times there's personal taste that you pick up something and say, like, for example, you, Chad, said, well, Star Wars is not science fiction to me, but somebody else might. I don't want to get back into this, but my point being...
it's like this big black hole.
My point being, though, that science... In fact, we even had that with the word genre.
Right.
There was some bait over even what the word genre means. Mm-hmm. So, neat discussion, but not the point of this episode. What we're going to talk about in this episode is specifically superhero games, and if we have time left over, we will blur that into its sister type of game, which is the epic level or what we call God level games. Mm-hmm. And you guys are going to help me out because I'm going to give you some of the roadblocks I have to running this type of game. Mm-hmm. And you guys are going to help me through them. But Chad, I want to start with you because you had some stuff that you were reading on a blog that you thought would help frame this discussion.
And this is a gentleman. He doesn't live in Missouri, but he's come out to Fear the Con. Actually, he's come out to Fear the Con 1 and 2, and he has gamed with you. And he was saying, you know, it's like, no, they got it wrong. It isn't that Dan is having a failure of imagination. That's totally not it, because look at what Dan has done. He's written Skies of Glass. And then he came up with Danvers. He came up with all of these games that people have played. It's like all these adventures. He's a GM. He's GM for 20 years, and people love his games. And he's like, I have played under him at these cons. I have played in his games, and they're great. I loved them. They were fantastic. To say he's not imaginative totally gets it wrong. But, and I 100% agree with him, He says you still have a problem in that when you talk about things that you can't wrap your head around, we'll say, for instance, from the last episode, the Anthro games, playing a wolf pack, you were saying things like, no, I don't think it should be done. I can't see it. I can't see anyone doing a long-term campaign with it. And with other things, superhero games, God games, whatever kind of games. And you always say no. It's always no. It's always, I don't see how that can be done. I don't think that that would be a good idea. I don't recommend people to do that. I would never do that myself. No, no, no. And it's this negative aspect. And he brought up the point. It's like, has anyone ever had a really great game by saying, no, we shouldn't have this kind of game?
I think you're 100% right. Because while we were recording the last episode, and then I went back and edited it, mm-hmm. and we got to the part where you were saying, why some people think you struggle with being imaginative. I'm running through my head. It's like, well, wait a minute. I've created this setting. I've created this setting. I've created mm-hmm. this setting. I've written my own plots for 20 some odd years. Just by the evidence alone, there's no way I think I could fairly be called unimaginative. Mm-hmm. But people have asked me several times, how has making this show changed me? Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest ways that
it's changed me a lot.
Oh,
it's changed completely changed my views on gaming.
It'd be utterly self-indulgent, so I'm not going to do it. But I mean, I could do a whole spinoff podcast on how podcasting has changed me. Mm-hmm. But one of the great things that has done for me is really broaden my horizons. There are many styles of gaming, genres of gaming, just ideas in general that at some point in time I was dismissive of, mm-hmm. I thought were dumb, there's no way. And over time, people challenged me on that. I've had to challenge my own ideas, and I've really broadened my horizons.
Yeah.
And the thing that I hope...
You know, I think one of the problems was, to get into your personal life, the gaming groups that you've had in the past were more negative to new ideas than you could ever possibly be.
Yeah.
So you might have, you know, it's like, well, I don't care for this, I don't care for this, but this, all this stuff over here is okay. They're like... Everything sucks. We want this one type of game, one setting, one genre, one type of thing. And that influenced you. Whereas now you're doing this podcast.
Here's two things that I hope anyone listening to this show can walk away with. The first is that I hope, just as this challenged me, that whether it's this episode or an episode before or an episode after, that something on this show will challenge you to broaden your horizons, to try something, to dive in there. Mm. I remember the first time I had sushi.
Yeah.
I was aghast at the idea of
eating, your eating bait.
I'm eating bait. I'm eating raw fish or octopus or eel.
Mm.
But Chad convinced me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I said yes. And ever since then, I've spent huge amounts of money on sushi.
Yes.
And you know what? You cannot have fun new experiences if you just shoot down every mm-hmm. idea in the world. Not to say you can't have standards. Not to say you can't have tastes. There are things I've tried and I hate them.
Yeah.
And
but now you know.
But now I know.
Yeah.
But I hope this will really...
Like Pat. I didn't think I'd like Pat the first time I met him.
And we don't.
No, we don't.
Does.
We don't. Right.
Which is
He's
why...
He's a terrible person.
This is mm-hmm. his last episode. Next episode, we're going to have a...
Thank God.
Yeah. Cheetah eating a monkey.
Yeah.
And that's going to be slightly
Really?
More. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Did you just say you're going to have a chimp eating a monkey?
No. A cheetah eating a monkey.
Cheetah eating a monkey.
See, a right. chimp eating a monkey.
That's monkey porn. That's monkey
yeah,
porn.
Yeah,
you're
that's,
disgusting,
that's,
Chris.
Yeah, that disgusting.
That's just totally wrong.
Against, right. I think that's against the law, even in Iowa. Yeah.
Chad, you need to say yes to monkey porn.
No. I'm closed-minded.
But the second thing is, there may be some of you who have similar roadblocks to running these particular types of games, where this episode may help you break down those roadblocks or at least give you some idea of how to do it with the games you do struggle with. Mm-hmm. Because there was somebody on the forums, I think it was Keith Curtis, who observed, I think Dan's issue with superhero games is the same issue I have with running a military game.
Mm-hmm.
It's not per se
yes.
that I can't imagine them. It's just I have these mental roadblocks I don't know how to break down
right.
to get from I don't understand it to here's how I can do it. So let's go ahead and dig into this. I want to put a little bit of framework around the discussion, not because of where I want it to go, but because of where I don't want it to go. What I don't want us to get into is trying to figure out what a superhero is. Is a level 10 wizard a superhero because technically he can do things nobody else can do and blah, 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 blah.
The guy in spandex with a cape.
Yeah, all right. I realize these are valid arguments. I realize these are interesting deconstructions. That's not the point of the episode. When we talk about superheroes, we're talking about the kinds of things you would find in your typical comic book that could be a guy in spandex like Superman, that could be something a little more gritty like that DC series we mentioned, The Boys.
The Boys. Oh, fantastic. And that's not about superheroes.
Or even to pick one that people are more familiar with, something like Watchmen. Mm-hmm. Where the majority of the superheroes in there really didn't even have...
Let's not pick Watchmen.
All right. The point being, what I don't want to get into is a deconstruction of what is and isn't a superhero. Just pretend you know what it means and let's move forward. Here's how we'll do this. I'm going to start going down the list of things that I am struggling with. What stand between me and running a superhero game? And I want to see what advice you guys can give me to make this work. The first one, and this is a very, very vague one. Do you guys think I'm just overthinking the whole thing?
Yes, I do. And I think that you're overthinking it because it's a common trap that all GMs can fall into. They just get too caught up in everything that is there and everything that's possible with the setting, you know, whether, and it's especially if it's a setting that they're not real keen on. They can just get caught up into it. And so, and thus, in a certain sense, it ends up paralyzing you. You just kind of get frozen in that. The way, of course, in my opinion, to deal with that then is to, and this kind of goes into one of the other things that you're saying, is that sometimes when you look at a genre or a type of game, you see limitless possibilities. You just see, we could go here, or we could go here, or what would happen if we started from here instead? And that, again, also paralyzes you. And so, really what you need to do is, rather than placing limits upon the game per se, you need to go and place some limits upon yourself. And just quite frankly, pick one or two things, avenues that you really want to explore, regardless of how appealing the other avenues may be, and then focus only on those. And if you want to do something with those later, then fine, do something with those other avenues later. But it's like, you know, pick a spot and stick with it, and then just go forward.
You know what I think part of my problem may be is, as human beings, we learn by example. To the best of my recollection, I have never in my 20 some odd years of gaming played in a superheroes game. I have attempted to run one or two.
Wanting to play one for years.
If you want to run one, I'll happily let you run one.
Oh, you let me. Thank you.
I'll give you, have my permission to run one.
But I've noticed that common theme here. It's because before it was like, he didn't want us to do certain things. He doesn't want us to, here's what we're not going to do.
Yeah.
And this, that, and the other. It's very controlling. Very controlling.
Well, that's why he's a GM.
I'm becoming more permissive, and you're bitching still. Pat, that's your problem. You don't know how to win.
I know. That's true.
But I think, seriously, I think that may be part of the issue, is that when I think of a superhero game, the example that I am using, consciously or subconsciously, is superhero movies. Superhero comic books, superhero graphic novels, stories that I think, while some ideas may translate to a role-playing game, not all the nuances are going to translate. And I'll get into those nuances that I struggle with here in a minute. I'm going to start at the general, and then I'll move to the specific. But I think part of the problem is I have trouble picturing the translation. Like, have you ever read a novel, and you're like, this was a great novel, but it never translates to a movie. You just can't picture it crossing mediums. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same sort of thing in that I think that maybe part of the reason I struggle picturing a good superhero game is because I've never played in one. And the one or two that I ran, for reasons that I think have nothing to do with the genre specifically, pretty much bombed in very short order.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that superhero games really lend themselves to the most basic attributes of what a role-playing game is. It's like you're a person who is special. You're powerful. You're singled out. You're unique. And because of that uniqueness, you either have this awesome Stan Lee-esque responsibility, or your life is suddenly the center of attention. That's what a cape is all about, you know? That's what you are, the center of attention, and you have to make these big choices of saving the world and doing all this stuff. And there's all these moral quandaries and whatnot. And there's bad guys. I mean, it's not like, well, I'm going to play a farmer in the Middle Ages. Now, what's my motivation? Where's the aggression at? Where's the conflict at? It's like, no, you're a superhero. There's a bad guy. He's robbing a bank. Punch him. It also gets deeper than that. I don't want to make it sound like superhero games are just beat 'em ups, because they're not. Because now it's like you're part of a super team and things like that.
But hold on a second, Chad. But hold on. But in a general sense, what you've just described in the beginning part of your statement, and I'm cutting you off because I don't want to get too far away from that.
Cutting me off because you finally have a chance to cut me off.
Yes. But what you've essentially described is basically 90% of any role-playing games that you would sit down and play.
Right.
There's no difference character-wise in what you just described is it could also be a fantasy game. Just as much as it could be a sci-fi
game, really
hate the most. As much as it could be anything else. Cutting me off when I'm talking?
Well, I really hate it whenever I finally come up with a point and you break in first and you've got the same point that I was going to bring up. Same point. No, that's good. No. It's just what
you're going to go on. You're going to expand on my point that I brought up first.
Yeah, I was sitting here thinking when he said that, you know, we've got the, basically like what you were saying is that you can say that about any setting. I mean, take fantasy, for example. Your party of player characters are just, I mean, they're essentially superheroes in comparison to the rest of the people because you've got these abilities.
Right, but I don't want to go down that road I don't want to go down the road deconstructing a superhero.
Even if we don't go down that road, the key thing in there that Chad said is that your character is special. Your character is special. Yeah. And the reason why he's special is because you're playing him.
Exactly.
So there's something special about that character. It doesn't matter if you're in the far past or in the far future. It doesn't matter. And you seem to get caught up really in what the setting is. And I think that is what's hamstringing you.
Maybe. You know, as I think about it, maybe the issue here is that I'm creating some kind of a false dichotomy. That maybe...
You love that word.
Phrase. But maybe because of I don't know, cultural immersion, it's easier for me to accept a guy in a dark blue robe throwing fire from his hands than it is for me to accept a guy in dark blue tights flying around New York. Maybe that's the issue. I don't know. That may be part
of
the issue.
You were never really a comic book reader as a kid.
No,
everybody loves Batman.
Yeah,
everybody loves
Superman. And I have a stack of maybe 50 or 100 comic books downstairs. But no, I was never a wild, avid collector. In fact, most of the comic books I own, I've never even read.
Right.
But no, I've never was an avid reader. Truth be told, most of what I know about comic books comes from two sources. One was for years, we were friends with a guy who owned a comic shop. And so we hung around there a lot. And just by osmosis, I picked up an enormous amount of comic book lore. And then the second is more recently the rash of what have been better and more faithful comic book movies. I know they're not perfect, but they've been better than many in the past. I see there being two types of superheroes. And I think that each lends itself to some slightly different problems. Some are the same. The first is the extraordinary person doing extraordinary things, Superman. Okay. The second is the ordinary person doing extraordinary things. Best example I can come up with, as silly as it is the Shoveler from Mystery Men.
Any character from Mystery Men. Any character from Mystery Men.
Well, the movies anyway.
Well, since some of those in the movie though, some of them did have superpowers.
Yeah. In the comic books, they all had. The comic book was very different.
Don't you want to give a reference that people would actually get? Five people saw it. Five people got that reference.
You cannot say Batman, because Batman is no longer an ordinary man doing extraordinary things. Batman, the way he is written today, he's a force of nature.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not human. Sure, in the story, he's a human being. It's his gadget. He's more intelligent than anybody, even though they don't say that. He's more acrobatic than any normal person, even though they don't say that. You know, he's got more wealth than anybody else, and they don't. You know,
that do say.
Well, yeah, that they do say.
it is a fair statement to say, I think, that any character from Mystery Men, the movie, even the ones that have powers, has more character depth, I think, that your average gamer could really immerse themselves in and identify with, because there's more flaws. There's a lot more flaws. And, yeah, they're not forces of nature by any stretch of the imagination. They're beatable.
Right, and you look at, like, for example, I mean, even in the movie, some of the characters did have superpowers. Like, the guy could turn himself invisible.
Do you really think Mystery Men is a bad movie?
I really enjoyed it.
It's fantastic, Pat.
But, all right, but
you are just wrong.
You know what? It's not whether or not it's a bad movie. It's that it failed. It flopped miserably. It was, I mean, you know, people may have seen it, but probably not. That's what I was getting at. All right. If we want to discuss the merits of cult classic movies, okay, that could be a whole other issue.
Here's the first issue I'm going to raise.
Nice dodge.
Here's the first issue I'm going to raise related to that statement I just made. If we're playing a superhero game and let's say, Chad, you're running a game for me and Pat. Pat wants to play Superman.
Yeah.
I want to play the Shoveler.
I'd totally allow it because it'd be fantastic.
But assuming for a moment you cared about rules.
Yeah. Yeah. Like your power levels.
Yes.
So to speak, we're talking DBZ power levels. Pat's at a 9,000 and you're at a 2 because you have a shovel.
Yeah. And every single scene, Pat is going to solve. He's going to beat every bad guy, solve every problem, bash down
every
door.
Why is he
going to
solve every problem?
Well, okay, I guess.
And I'm not talking it's Pat. I mean, it's like, yeah, you have super strength and bullets bounce off you. You're good in a fight, but you know what?
You can't dig a tunnel to the mole people.
Fighting and digging tunnels to the mole people is not what
I can
a role-playing
dig
game is.
I just have to spin around really fast.
That's just,
we've seen it.
That's just
story.
One part of the role-playing game. Being able to beat somebody up. Who cares?
Well, but brute force also allows you to solve other problems. They won't let me into the building. I'm Superman.
Yeah, but you get in the building, and then what? They don't talk to you. They don't tell you what you need to know. They don't interact with you. It's like, hey, you're Superman. You're a super... I mean, we're going to call the cops. What are you going to do? Beat up a cop on national TV? Army's going to come after you. Shoveler, on the other hand, is like, well, you know what? Maybe I could put my gear in the trunk and con my way into the building and do the role-playing game shtick.
I'm just going to put my glasses on
Wouldn't that be wouldn't that be a great interaction? You would have cool inter-party conflict of Pat thinks he's better than Dan. Dan is trying to not be a sidekick. The media is portraying him as a sidekick, and there's tension, but you two are friends, and you're all operating toward the greater good, but there's this tension in the group because Pat is God, and you have a shovel.
So, Chris,
I think that's a fantastic game.
Oh, absolutely. And you throw in the element of the woman that Pat is interested in has just no attraction to him whatsoever, and actually likes Dan's character. And there's nothing Pat can do aside from ripping you limb to limb to remove that.
I'm not going to role play out a woman who is attracted to Pat.
Oh, yes, you are.
My RP skills are not that good.
You don't have to play a woman.
All right. But Chris, let me pass the question, or at least the premise that Chad gave there to you. I want to hear your take on this. Speaking specifically towards the scaling of power between the different kinds of superheroes, do you believe the solution, or do you agree with Chad that the solution is in game mastering? That if the game master is careful and is committed to this, and they have to be committed to this, to making solutions that cannot be solved through person A's superpowers, but rather are solved through the social skills or moxie or whatever of person B, that helps to make a gap of power irrelevant.
Yes. I mean, granted, that's an extreme gap of power. So it would be an interesting juggling act to see how long Chad could continue that. But in essence, he's correct. And it happens in games already. Think about other games you've sat down. Clearly, there are one or two characters at the table who are, without a doubt, more powerful than the other character. There might be some closeness there, but when it came down to it, there is one or two characters that are always more powerful than somebody else. Yeah, and the way to beat them is you attack them in areas that have nothing to do with their powers whatsoever. Nothing to do with their powers, and you get them on that personal level. So it is part good game mastering, but it is also a player's responsibility to A, provide enough meat for the GM to chew on, and then also a player's responsibility to engage on that level. You got to give the GM stuff to work with, and once he starts working with it, you are obligated as a player to play that character as you should. If he's attacking you at this angle, you got to go with it.
Have you guys ever heard of a comic book called The Freshman?
No.
This is a really good comic book. I enjoy it a lot. And basically, I won't get into people's backstories or the plot or stuff. You guys can go out and check out The Freshman anyway. You should. It's very good. But anyway, it's a superhero team. And it's not a megaverse. There's no Superman running around. But anyway, these group of college freshmen get turned into superheroes. And all of these people are not into comic books. They're not. They don't want to be superheroes and stuff. And the one guy who is a total nerd, who is their friend, who reads comics, loves comics, loves video games, wants to be a superhero, he's the only one who doesn't get turned into a superhero. And he joins their team, and they call him the wannabe. And he has no superpowers whatsoever, but he keeps trying to keep up because it's his identity. He wants to be a superhero. And he's the one who knows all the tropes. He's the one that's like, there's a big villain bad guy that comes up, and they're all like, huh, what? And he's the one who can figure it out. And in The Freshman, also beyond just the wannabe, being an interesting character who is part of that, who is in no way at the, quote, stupid-ass power level that the other characters are at, he is in that comic episode after episode. He's a main character. He's an interesting character. He's part of the plot episode after episode, or issue after issue. There's also other characters in there who do have superpowers, but their superpowers are frigging useless. One of them is sticky. I mean, it's just things kind of stick to him. It's totally worthless power. He has to wear a rubber suit just so he can get by in life. But he's an interesting character. He's a minor character, but he's an interesting character. He's always in there, you know, through it. And then they have characters who have really useful powers, you know, ability to take over people's mind, telekinesis, and that sort of thing. And, you know, the power levels are different within the comic book, but it works. It works as it's an ongoing story that has a good plot, an excellent story, great characters, great interaction. They have fun adventure fights. I mean, isn't this what we say the role-playing game is and should be? It's not about whether you can punch somebody's head off.
I will agree with you on that. That sounds like a great story to read. I mean, just to talk about the wannabe, he's a great character because I can see where they're going to, go with that. I haven't read it, but I can, I'm already assuming in my mind, he knows all the tropes. So what he can do, even though he has no powers, he can go in and see the situation, say, okay, you super guy, you can use your power to do this.
And
to
he
disable
does that.
Him.
Exactly. That.
Exactly. Now the problem is you take that to the table. How I play the wannabe at the table. Mm-hmm. How the hell am I going to do that in a superhero game setting? Because if you're running the game, I don't know what you're throwing at me.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, maybe I know everybody's powers that are the rest of the players. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that I can't react to what Dan has going because, well, it's just hard to do in game at the table and
that's
say,
just
you
it.
Do this
listen to what you're saying. You don't know how it's going to work out. You don't know how that's going to happen. Isn't that the fun of the role playing game?
It is
to discover that.
The point that I was going to get though too is we're talking about this power level, and my feeling on it, be it advice, whatever you want to say, is that if you're going to run a superhero game, certainly if you've never done it before or if you're new to it, I think what you need to do is you need to sit down at the beginning and come up with players, you know, all your player characters that have basically powers that are at least in the ballpark
basically
with each other.
You're talking about for your, if it's the first game and nobody's done, and this is an experiment, like with Dan.
Yes.
It should be, you should be playing Justice League, not the Freshman.
Well, exactly. Just keep it all relative. They don't have to all have, okay, you're 80% strength, everybody, but just ballpark it. Yeah. Because what you're going to deal with is if you've got such a disparity, like you mentioned, it just makes it so hard for everybody. It puts a huge load on the game master, but also the players to try to come up with these clever ways, like what we've been saying. It's been great discussion, and that is an idealistic world, but we've got to also think, we're sitting around with players at the table. We've never done this before. You just don't get gold every time you're there. I mean, look at our own situations. Like, you know, you can sit there and be floundered by something.
I think if your characters are good and your players are, well, basically if your players are good as well, and the GM is good, if everybody at the table is a good role-playing gamer and has played role-playing games before, I don't think it's a huge issue myself.
Well, I do, and a perfect example for me is Star Wars. Now, love it or hate it in the role-playing sense, I've done it before, and The best example is you have Jedi and then you've got everybody else.
Yeah.
And talk about disparity of powers. And they've actually,
now,
you know,
the new one, coast,
they've tried
that.
To fix yeah. it. I think they failed because beforehand you just had Jedis, which are gods.
Right.
And then you had non-Jedis, which are just regular people.
Mm-hmm.
And you get them together. How do you interact? Because the Jedi can just do anything. The powers are ridiculous. So they try to fix it to make it a level playing field. But what they did is they just neutered the Jedi into comical uselessness, I think. I mean, I've played it. It just doesn't feel as good because it's like you're sitting there trying to do the stuff that any Jedi has done in any movie. And it's like, oh, I'm sorry, that doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that's an example of, you know, that level, that power disparity.
And, you know, I see what you're saying. I do see, like, especially the Star Wars example, mm-hmm. where the game master is like, okay, there's a group of 8 players, but only one of you gets to be the Jedi. And, you know, the Jedi is a Jedi, and everybody else is Princess Leia and Han, I don't know, even look at the movies with that. You had one Jedi. You had one Jedi. You had Luke, and he could do all the crazy stuff, but all the other characters played a big part.
But you know what, though? I was thinking about that, too, when you started in the Star Wars example. And the problem with that is, if you think about it, there wasn't a lot of times, there was some, but not a lot, when they were all together doing stuff. Most of the time, they were off on their own deals. The Sarlacc pit is probably about the only time that they were going, together.
Look at the Sarlacc pit. And using the Luke example, I mean, in the first two movies, he's essentially a Padawan. He's a fledgling. He doesn't really do much.
It's Jedi. Padawan.
By the time he gets to the, you know, Return of the Jedi, obviously he's got more of his powers, but you want to look more at the first three movies.
Well, let's take a narrower example, because like I said, Star Wars is an awful example of a role-playing game because it's the role-playing game where the entire party is split up most of the time. But let's look at when they're all together. They're in Jabba's floating thing. And even before the action and fighting starts, you got your Jedi who's super powerful. You got your one guy who's just a space bum and he's blind at this point. And then you have a Wookiee who is all tied up and can't do anything. And then you have your diplomat who's in a bikini chained to a slug. And you know what? They come out of it. They worked at their disparaged power levels and they work together. And it with that whole scene from the role-playing aspect into the combat action aspect, into the adventure part, would make a great role-playing game session.
That would be a good session.
Well, total power level disparities, great role-playing.
I think speaking specifically about power disparities. Mm-hmm. And I want to move on from that because obviously not all these games have to have a power disparity. But if we have the extraordinary man doing extraordinary things,
mm-hmm.
Luke, Superman,
sure.
versus the ordinary man doing extraordinary things, Han Solo, the Shoveler, then it's basically going to require...
That is the worst fanfic premise you've ever pitched me.
Probably so. But there are three things I think that you're going to have. One, is the game cannot be purely about combat.
Right.
If this is a hack and slash...
Oh, it'll be boring for everybody because you'll have one guy who's punching everything and then you'll have one guy who isn't doing anything.
Right.
And
And the second thing, and I guess the second and third together, there's got to be a lot of trust and maybe even an upfront sort of social contract, something that goes beyond the group template where you make an agreement as a party of players that, number one, this is how I am still going to be workable in the game.
Mm-hmm.
This is where I'm useful. This is where I'm going to shine. This is where there's going to be something neat for me to role play. And you have to have a lot of trust for the game master, a lot of merited trust, let me stress, that the game master's not going to start glossing that over as the campaign goes on and allowing Superman to brute force his way through. Now let's move on to something else here.
Why Robert Kirkman is a genius comic book writer?
The other thing...
I'm a huge Walking Dead fan.
One of the other things that I struggled with,
mm-hmm.
and this once again could just be predisposition based on things I've been exposed to, but a lot of the superhero stuff I've read deals heavily
with the ninjas.
Internal development of the character.
Mm-hmm.
For example...
Yeah.
You can take someone like Batman, where he's very pensive. There's a lot of conflict between who I am and what I ought to do. Spider-Man's the same way. Maybe it's a social problem of how do I reconcile the fact that I'm a superhero by day and my wife doesn't know.
Do you know why I think you're both right and wrong in that statement?
There could be. Okay, but here's my point. Here's my point.
Okay.
My broader point here is that internal development, I think, is really neat, but I don't see how to translate that to a table, particularly if you have more than one or two players. Lone Wolf, great idea.
Yeah.
But how do you do that kind of development or allow for that when you've got four or five players?
Let's look at comic books as our example again.
Okay.
Because, like I said, I think you're both right and wrong at the same time.
Okay.
In what you were saying. You were giving examples like Batman and Spider-Man, and we can even throw Superman in there. These people are, these characters, these capes, are in their original main stories, are loners. They go out and they fight crime by themselves.
Right.
Or they might have a sidekick, but you know, that's kind of their thing, is they're alone. If you look at a different kind of comic book, like the Cape teams, like the different X-Men titles and stuff, it is the complete opposite. The singular guys, yeah, it's all brooding and inner turmoil and thought bubbles, you know, the little clouds and stuff. In the team comics, they don't shut up. It's like X-Men especially, it's they go on and on and on about their personal demons and problems with each other, and the total opposite that
it basically goes from a Faulkner book to a soap opera.
Yes.
And I'm putting
X-Men
it in,
is yeah and it took but I, actually I think X-Men is a total soap opera.
Put it in, yeah. Yeah, I'm intentionally putting it in somewhat silly terms here,
right? But yeah, I think that when you go into the team dynamic, you
allow the internal development to occur external.
Either people pointing out the development to you, you know, it's like, gee, Scott, I really think you're a tool. Take off those red sunglasses and stop being a p-. Or it's going to be external where Wolverine says, you know, I need to stop growling and maybe shave. And God, I use a lot of moose on this hair, and help me, you know, overcome my moose addiction, guys. And I think that's what more the team comes.
He is about. Canadian. I mean,
you get that too with the singular guys, like Justice League stuff. They team up with each other, and Spider-Man and Batman look at each other and say, insert funny joke here. I don't know. I'm not a big JLA fan. So. I'm not a really big mainstream comic book fan. I read a lot of underground stuff in Japanese comics because I'm just cool and snobby like that.
I don't know. To me, I'd say I'm not really sure what the hell you guys are even talking about, because, again, it's no different than any other party.
Yeah.
Every person's got to take the spotlight at one point in time and deal with their own internal issues. They just do, because that's the way it goes. That's what you should be doing. Every character should have internal issues over the course of your campaign, regardless of the length, that you need to resolve. And so, you know, whether you're Superman or whether you're Elminster, you go through and you deal with those issues and you solve them.
Yeah. And really, from a genre perspective, if we're talking about caped superhero genre role-playing games, maybe we should tone down the interpersonal drama anyway. You know, it's supposed to be fun and adventure. It's kind of one of those level meters. It's like you have your little violence meter and you kind of turn that up a little, and you have your adventure meter, turn that up a little, and you have the drama, and the drama could be somewhere in the middle, and the interpersonal stuff should be there, but maybe not as high as the adventure. And, you know, if you're playing something like Vampire the Masquerade, all of these little levers switch, and maybe you take down the adventure a little bit and you up the interpersonal drama and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's...
All right, let me pitch to you guys a specific kind of superhero game, and this is where I'm going to bridge over into the epic level games. Let's say you have a superhero game where the party consists entirely of Superman or Superman level characters. Okay, these are all gods among men. Mm-hmm. You don't have anybody in there like Cyclops where, okay, he can shoot I-beams, but an AK-47 would take him out. These are all gods among men. And you could just easily bridge this into any kind of other game. If you play D&D, everybody in the party is level 20, mm-hmm, or 20 plus, depending on the particular expansion you're playing. One of the things that I struggle with is when epic level things occur, they are shocking and they are exciting to the players because of the fact that they are unusual. Instead of stopping a bank robbery instead of stopping some mid-level colonel who's trying to start an uprising in the army, you just save the world from aliens of godlike power.
Right.
Or from
Galactus.
Or from the Red Wizards of Thay, who had this plot to destroy all of Faerun or whatever. Okay, you've done that. You've done that because, quite frankly, at that epic level, that's really all that challenges you. Doesn't that diminish the excitement or the interest of the very next thing that comes along?
You ever read Greek mythology?
That was actually one of the places I was going to go. Is something like Mount Olympus, the politics among gods, sufficient to keep a story
like
that going?
I don't think you have to go the Greek mythology level of just really being a super to your family members. But,
well,
you know, I mean, that's kind of what
debaucherous and evil.
Yeah, but you understand what I'm saying.
Right.
It's you still have this character. You still have these goals and these motivations and these wants and these desires. And maybe the desires, instead of getting, I don't know, you know, local power or prestige, it's getting galactic power and prestige. It's really all the same thing. It's the same stories. It's the same struggles. And I'm not saying this is like, oh my God, the same stories. It's so boring. No, I'm saying that's a good thing. It's the same stories, the same struggles, the same interpersonal dramas that you'd have if you're playing kids with slingshots fighting the town bullies in a neighborhood. And that's your role playing. It's neighborhood, the role playing game. All the way up to you're playing interdimensional gods battling whatever. It doesn't matter. It's still about personality. I mean, at what point does the personality, the things that you role play, go away because you get more stats in your character sheet or you get more power? You can melt more planets.
I can see where you're coming from a little bit, Dan. In a certain sense, I can agree and or identify with you. Because I think when you get to that level, there is a presumption. Because it's like, I got this, I have this piece of paper that is just freaking loaded for bear. And there's nothing more I want to do than roll dice and see what I can squash into dust. And that can only hold your entertainment and your interest for so long. And while I agree with you, Chad, that yes, they are still characters and they still have enemies, they still have people gunning for them, they still have things that they want that they may not be able to get. There's a pre-presumption that when I sit down at this table, I want to kill things. And not only do I want to kill things, I want to use this spectacular power to do so. So GM, give me what I want.
Why? Well, I disagree, because if my character is a soldier holding an AK-47 or a god throwing lightning bolts, you know, the desire to just kill stuff and masturbate dice ain't really my thing.
Well,
I know that some people are into the tactical aspect,
right.
and I know that I'm at an extreme, so mine is not the norm, but I don't think that everybody who, when you hand them a character sheet and it's 3 pages long of algebra, numbers, and abilities, I don't think that your average role player looks at this and is like, you know, I had a good character in mind, but screw that, I want to kill
Well, can I cut the difference here?
No.
Okay, well, I'm going to.
All right.
Chad, I absolutely agree with what you're saying.
Woohoo!
I think part of the problem that I have had with superhero games is I'm going to wager a lot of people listening to this who themselves have been resistant to one game or another probably have the same issue, which is the fact that I'm failing to realize the same type of drama, the same type of character development, the same type of intrigue and dialogue and interaction. Role playing, okay, what the hobby's about, can exist no matter who you are, where you are, or what you're doing. And the fact that it's a setting where I maybe don't know those types of stories as well does not alleviate that fact. In fact, one of the challenges, it looks like our Gen Con schedules here is pretty empty because we've not committed to doing really much of anything. So maybe one of the things I'm going to do is try to get together with some fellow Fear the Booters and get some superhero role-playing games in and really try this out, you know, and see how this is going to work. But Chris, or I'm going to cut the difference with you, or I guess agree with you more appropriately, is the fact that to me, the drama is a critical part of the game. A game is boring to me if there is no drama, if there is no real role play. But I also do want to know that there is a plot, that there is a challenge, that there is something that goes a little beyond the drama, and that my powers alone won't let me bypass it. We've all been in the role-playing game where, you know what, I could negotiate with this guard all day and try and convince him, but it's easier just to shoot his ass in the head and move on. And when you're Superman or have that level of power, that gets a whole lot easier to do. And so you kind of get put in this position, if you're not careful, of either suddenly everyone you interact with is epic level, and to quote The Incredibles, if everybody's special, then what that really means is nobody's special, or you have some kind of character limitation that keeps you from doing that. You know, I guess that what I'm saying is you have to be real careful, because if you want to keep that challenge, that plot that is beyond the drama, then the epic can quickly become the mundane, because if everybody's special, then nobody's special. If everything you do is saving the world, then saving the world's really not that exciting anymore. And that's
what works for Superman. He saves the world every week.
Yeah, and his comic book sales have been steadily declining. I mean, that's point in case, you know, and that's I think also part of what I struggle with. And maybe the answer is maybe just for me personally, just because of my taste, playing something like X-Men where we have superpowers, but we're not Superman, is the better way to go.
It just seems to me that, is a character truly defined by his power over life and death? I have a character who has a pistol. My character can kill. I'm Superman. My character can kill. Who cares? That's not what it's about. And too many role-playing games, and this is my biggest problem with not role-playing games the hobby, but role-playing games themselves, is that your average, not every of them, not all of them, but your average role-playing game book, when you go to the bookstore and you pull it off the shelf, you open it up and it's 12 pages of story, 10 pages of character creation, and 98 pages of how to kill people and the implements to do it with.
Right.
And to me, it's not epic level stuff that gets you in that bloodthirst and gets you to ignore your character. It's not even bloodthirst that gets you to ignore your character. It's these damn role-playing game companies that get you to ignore your character. They don't make books that help you role-play. Now, I think that that's where, like, a lot of the indie press is coming up, because I think a lot of the indie press is doing that. To go off on a wild tangent here, I think that's almost the problem with the indie press, is that they're trying to swing the pendulum too far. They're not trying to cut a balance, and they're trying to appeal to very niche players, such as myself.
Well, and one thing that I will say, going back to the Mount Olympus examples, even at that epic level, it does allow you to deal with challenges, even purely combat challenges.
Guy with pistol cannot kill Galactus.
Yes.
I am sorry, precisely. It's never going to happen.
And a regular dude off the street with a sword is not going to kill a wake and alert dragon.
Yeah.
And so
Superman does not necessarily care about guy with pistol robbing a bank,
right,
when Galactus is trying to eat the world.
Precisely. And so it allows you to deal with a kind of plot, a kind of story you can't deal with otherwise. And many people have told me over the years, and I don't know that this applies to me personally, but it does to other people, and I fully appreciate and understand this. They say, look, I'm the regular guy all day long. Mm-hmm. I want to be something special. I want to be the extraordinary man doing extraordinary things, because part of this is an escape. And so I understand the attraction of playing Superman versus playing the shoveler. And, you know, even though, like I said, that may not be my thing, I understand why that is somebody else's thing.
And I don't want to sound like I'm a person who, oh, well, you know, you need to play the low power character because he's going to have more depth. That's totally not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that any character will have depth that you put into it. Any game will have the depth that you put into it.
Right.
And there's
it's all what you bring to the table.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a bad game. I mean, we've had great Rifts games.
So I think, you know, really walking away from this, my final conclusion here is I think I was bringing a lot of prejudices to the table that are based on a lack of experience with superhero role-playing games, and perhaps poisoning experiences with superheroes in their other forms. Not that we're always bad, but that simply I looked at him like, this is not going to translate to a role-playing right. game. You know, The Dark Knight was a great movie. It would not translate well to a party-wide role-playing game.
No, that's too much grunting.
Yeah. So, alrighty. So,
well, Dan, let me ask you this before we sign out.
All right.
So, your opinion on superhero games have changed. Has this episode or this discussion changed your view on other games? Do you think that you could play a wolf pack in an extended campaign?
Well, yes.
Not to dwell too much on the example. All right, well, you see what I'm getting at?
Yes and no. Let me say this. The one thing I think this episode has reminded me of is a truth that I knew a decade ago and had forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy we used to game with where every character he made had to be either abnormal or abnormally powerful. He always had to play somebody special. And in one game, we made him play an office worker with a 38 special.
Mm-hmm.
That was all he had. But nonetheless, we showed him how that character could still be a vibrant and exciting part of the plot as long as the character was well-developed and the GM was careful to make that character useful and not write it so that you just sit there while everybody else kicks ass.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a truth I had forgotten, that you can play anything, and as long as the GM is attentive to that fact, and as long as you put the effort into the character, you can make it work. And that's going to be true of superheroes, that's going to be true of Anthros, that's mm-hmm. going to be true of animals. Now, with the wolf pack example specifically,
yeah,
I think there was a limitation on that that I think may have been misunderstood as lack of imagination, which is when we were talking about that, I specifically said a wolf pack with animal intelligence. And I said I didn't see a game there for the simple reason that animals don't have the complex drama humans do. Yeah. Now,
are social creatures.
Right. But, now, yeah. Could you play a wolf pack with
Watership Down style? Yeah, Secret of Nim.
Yes, because you may have to change the kind of depth you put in there because a wolf or a rabbit or whatever is not like you or me.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, if you put the depth in there and the GM isn't a jerk to you and doesn't write the game around you, then absolutely. I mean, the entire point of the game, role-playing games, it's to be something else, somewhere else, maybe even at a different point in history. Mm-hmm. It's to try things that aren't you.
Yeah.
And I think somewhere along the way, as a GM, I think I'm more broad-minded than some other people in the hobby, because we've talked about the difference between the GM and the player. Players tend to be more resistant to new ideas than GMs, but guess what? I've got my own hangups
mm-hmm.
that I think I just need to get out there and try some other things and you know, put those prejudices aside. So as for you guys, I hope you'll apply this as well. You know what? If there's that game that your group or your game master has been wanting to try and you've been resistant to, you know what? Nobody ever found any great new experiences by constantly saying no. Give it a try. Worst case scenario, you waste 4 hours on one night having fun with your friends.
Yep.
Wow.
Nobody ever had fun saying no.
Yeah. So think about it. Great stuff. Thank you guys, mm-hmm. both the people on the forums, the folks on the blogs, and then also you guys here at the hosting roundtable for your guys' insight on this.
Pat, we're proud of you. You had a nice, good section of talking there.
It's like you're a real person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far.
So,
Pat, you're playing your character. Good job.
So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later.
Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.